toughness. I mean, they're a really tough team. You know, they're going to have their crowd behind them this time. So we're just going to, you know, have to pretty much play a full 40 minutes and you know, hopefully come out with a win.
That is what Tyler Ennis had to say prior to the 2014 game against Pittsburgh, in which he would end the game on a buzzer beater. Coming up, you will hear from Matt Park, Mike Waters, Julie Boeheim, and Buddy Boeheim on each game, starting with the 2014 game at Pittsburgh, then the 2016 Elite Eight game against Virginia, and wrapping up with the 6-overtime game. Those people will be in each section along with several others in the applicable game, and they will retell the story and recreate the emotion that Orange Nation felt when those games took place. This is Sports Night on WAER.
DJ Fair, former Syracuse basketball player.
I always tell people playing at Pitt, that was one of the most hostile environments that I experienced through my college career.
I'm going to be totally honest with you. That first Syracuse-Pittsburgh matchup at the Carry Dome, I remember very little about it. I remember both teams being ranked, and I remember Syracuse pulling out about a 5-point win.
The first time playing them, I don't remember the exact game plan, but I remember, you know, any game against Pitt was always going to be a tough one because they always gave us problems. So we knew it was going to be a tough physical game going into it.
Dave O'Brien, play-by-play for Syracuse-Pitt 2014. We were focused a great deal on the fact that Pitt never lost to a top-five opponent in their building. And that was a big deal because SU came in number one. They came in undefeated. And we knew based on the previous matchup at the Dome earlier that winter that it was going to be a rock fight. It was going to be a real war of the game. And it turned out to be exactly that, very similar to the first game. And what was on the line? And obviously number one in the country was on the line, an undefeated record. But I thought it was fascinating that Pitt just didn't lose to anybody, had never lost to a top five opponent in that arena, which was such a brutally tough place to go in and play for any opponent.
My name's Ari Aron. I went to Pitt. I was class of 2017. 2014 was my freshman year. And so before the season starts, they literally like hold events for the Oakland Zoo, like educating all the Pitt freshmen on just like the expectations of what it's like to be in the student section. It's designed the entire Peterson's Event Center so that the zoo is right on top of you. And so it incentivizes the students to be just as crazy as possible.
I might rank them number one as far as the environment, how hostile it gets, how loud it gets. You know, it's definitely a tough place to play in.
For the Syracuse game, I went with a few of my friends, and we got there. We actually stayed overnight to get in the first row of the Oakland Zoo.
The Oakland Zoo at Pittsburgh is a very rowdy, vocal, energetic student section. They ring the court. In Pitt's heyday, the Oakland Zoo is equivalent to the Cameron Crazies.
Yeah, Cameron is a tough place to play, but Pittsburgh is just another level or hostile.
They can impact the game. They were there early. They were in line outside of the Peterson Event Center. You got to remember, this wasn't just some team taking a shot at number one. Pittsburgh's good, too. They're in the top 25.
They were vicious. The crowd was vicious. The crowd was from Jump Street, from the opening minute. It was an electrifying atmosphere. It really was like being inside of a zoo, you know, like being the center of prey if you're Syracuse and Jim Boeheim.
Their fans know everything about you, from your mother name down to your girlfriend name. So, and they use that to their best ability to distract you.
Before the game, we're reading all about each player. And, you know, if there's anything we can do or say to give our team a competitive edge, like, we're going to do that.
It was funny, though. I mean, I remember sitting on the Syracuse bench talking with Coach Boeheim, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes before the game. And he was the most relaxed guy in the world, you know, and that's typical of Jim. He's pretty nonplussed, you know, regardless of the opponent or the setting. But when that game started, it was like a high tension wire running through the building for the next 2 hours, and it never stopped. and it was a really, really electrifying atmosphere for a college basketball game.
Patterson, an NBA range three. Swish! The biggest lead of the game for Pittsburgh. Cooney, three! Got it! Trevor Cooney was left wide open on the left wing.
My memories of the first half aren't of anything in a specific, like this play or that play. It was more of, this game is being played at Pittsburgh's pace. This was going to be a low-scoring, blue-collar, bring-your-lunch-bucket type of game, which is exactly what Pitt wanted.
My overall memory was it was pretty much a mirror image of the first meeting, and that was very much a muddy affair. That was two really good teams, but not high-scoring teams, going toe-to-toe, and they were going to be very stubborn about what they did. I do remember at one point Jim Boeheim said after the first game something like, you know, it's not the fact that our zone necessarily does anything different to them. It's that they play the zone particularly well, that Jamie had always coached against it better than other guys.
They had good guards, you know, for a lot of years there under Ben Howland and Jamie Dixon both. Played sound, not super flashy, didn't really help you beat them.
So I guess that was the thing that stuck out in my mind, was that Pitt was doing exactly what they needed to do if they were going to beat the number one team in the country against that zone. They were very effective against it.
Those type of games are expected when you put at Pitt, when it's kind of a low-scoring game. Just going into halftime, we knew it was going to be just like this, so we just had to grind it out, and it came down to the last shot.
Syracuse in transition. Ennis, free throw line, floater, got it! How about the brisk drive by Ennis resulting in an easy two?
We needed to focus on Tyler Ennis because he was having a special season. Just a freshman, but what he had already done, the hearts he had already broken of opponents along the way, made it a special year. For him, whether he was a freshman, sophomore, junior, or senior.
Tyler Ennis had a knack for remaining poised right from the beginning of his freshman season. He was the starter right from day one.
To have a freshman step in and play at a really high level on a good team in a major conference is pretty rare. You know, you see it happen at the Dukes and Kentucky's once in a while, but it's not to be taken for granted.
I remember talking to some of the Syracuse coaches in practice before the season started, and they were telling me about this freshman guard, that he already knew how to use the high ball screen. Like, they didn't even have to coach him on it. He just had an innate ability to run the team at the point.
DJ Fair is another guy. I mean, that guy was a winner. He made plays, didn't melt in the key situations.
For our team to have that much success, you know, being my last year, it was, you know, definitely a lot riding on me and how I was going to lead the group. And we had a lot of young players that was, you know, all bought into the system, and we all played well together. So that really made things gel.
At this point in the season, this is a Syracuse team that just completely believes in itself. The players were riding a winning streak. They were making winning plays.
Our team always showed good composure going into games. Never in my college career that I thought we was going to lose before a game. And even during the game, we could be down 10 or 12 points in the second half. And for some reason, I never thought we were out of our game. And even the ones we lost, I still felt as though we could have won. I think, like, a lot of my teams had the same mentality, just knowing that we have a chance to come back and win. And we showed that a lot of times.
3.5 minutes in, drive to the basket, layup good, and the foul for Lamar Patterson. Sore thumb and all, Lamar Patterson forces a timeout by head coach Jim Boeheim.
We won that game because we never gave up. And it showed, you know, we had a chance to just fold when we went down late in the game, but we kept fighting and waiting for our break. And, you know, Tyler got an opportunity to, you know, make a shot of his career, and he made it. And, you know, and people live for those moments. But yeah, it was just from the team just not never giving up.
Lamar Patterson, like, airballs a shot, the entire arena is, you know, you're like, oh my goodness. But Talib Zana catches it, and we make a basket.
3 seconds on shot clock. Deep three. Tipped in by Zana. Right place, right time for Talib Zana. And it's a 6-point deficit for Syracuse, 54-48. Crowd on its feet.
It's kind of one of those things where you feel like everything is in our favor tonight. The number one team is in our building. The crowd, everyone there is expecting a win. No one is expecting us to run away with it, but it was about as positive of a crowd as you could have at that point. And the energy was just unreal. The players feeding off of it. It seemed like every 50-50 ball we were getting to. And Syracuse was obviously the more talented team. But, you know, if we're going to win the game, that play where, you know, Patterson airballs it and Talib Zana is right there to catch it, those are the kinds of plays that you need to beat a number one team.
Well, I do remember that play very vividly, and I remember when he caught it and made it, I remember thinking Syracuse is in deep trouble. They're in deep trouble because you can't hear yourself think now. You know, the roof is being blown off the place.
When Syracuse fell behind by 6 and the crowd is sensing that they've got to win, that's when Syracuse really leaned heavily on its belief, and they leaned heavily on a guy like C.J. Fair.
Yeah, I remember Zana, he did get a tip in. And then for me going to offense, I just knew I just had to make a play. And I seen how they was guarding me, and I was able to, you know, get an open look. So, you know, I was shot it with confidence and, you know, gave our team a shot at it, cutting down the lead.
We're all going to remember Tyler Ennis, ultimately, for the shot that wins the game. But C.J. Fair brought this team back. You know, he hits a three, and it's the only three-pointer he makes of the game. And, you know, and C.J. didn't make a lot of threes that season, but he made one then, and then he scored actually 5 points in a row to bring Syracuse back within one.
Man, that comes from a lot of hours spent in the gym way before college, even during my college career. But that's just how I grew up, you know. You don't have confidence in yourself, you're not going to be a good player.
I remember just everyone looking around thinking, like, wow, they're not going away. You know what I mean? This is going to be scrappy until the very end of the game.
C.J. Fair in front of the Syracuse bench on the far side. Jumper. Good! The senior putting the team on his back.
I remember looking at Tyler Ennis at that point and thinking to myself, okay, kid, now you're really up against it. You're on the road. This place is going bananas. Now we're going to see what moxie you're really made of, you know. And I remember looking at the kid and thinking, you know, baby-faced freshman, he looks like the most confident guy in the world. He looks like none of this is even getting through his ears.
I would say it was actually pretty uncharacteristic for us that we weren't hitting shots late in the game, because Pitt actually had a few players that, you know, throughout their careers were known for being clutch players. James Robinson, Lamar Patterson, Jamel Artis, Mike Young, all four of those players have hit huge shots for us over the course of their careers.
It was about as good as I had ever seen the defense played by Jim Boeheim's team. It was about as good as I had ever seen. And I think he commented later how proud he was about that, you know, that defensively, they made some great stops. It wasn't a mistake-free last couple of minutes, but my memory was that Syracuse played as good a defensive couple of minutes down the stretch on the road as anybody played all season long. I mean, all of college basketball.
Keeping the ball out of their guys' hands, their main scorer's hands, just making other players make plays that normally isn't in that situation at that time. So, you know, I know Lamar Patterson had things going, so just try to take the ball out of his hands. And I think what their problem was, it was kind of trying to ice the clock and stuff instead of playing, and I think we played that to our advantage.
At the point late in the game, about 4 seconds to go, when there's a foul called and Talib Zana goes to the line. At first, Zana's not a terrific free throw shooter. So both teams are having to, you know, figure out what they're going to do. And then when he makes them both and gives Pitt the lead, then the final stage is set.
I also remember Pitt made a lot of foul shots. Pittsburgh made a lot of foul shots down the stretch, which wasn't necessarily their forte.
Zana, 60% on the air coming into tonight, but great. 6 of 7 tonight. Yeah! Makes that 7 of 8.
That's what set up the final shot in the end, was the fact they were making foul shots. And I thought a coaching mistake by Jamie Dixon as well.
Jamie Dixon actually decides to call a timeout after the free throw, and it allows Syracuse a chance to set up a play. And it was still from under their own net, so they still could go like 90 feet, but it at least gave them a chance to gather themselves because the place was so incredibly loud. Like everyone in the stadium, not just the student section jumping up and down, but the entire stadium.
You know, Jamie Dixon calling a timeout. Jamie called a timeout to freeze the clock at 4 seconds, 4.4, whatever it was. And Jim Boeheim didn't call that timeout. Jamie Dixon called that timeout. And that allowed Syracuse to set up that play. And further, Pitt allowed the one guy in the building you shouldn't allow to get the ball with 4 seconds left to get the inbounds. And that was Tyler Ennis.
Initially, they wanted to throw it long. They wanted to get it to half court. But that was actually closed off. Tyler Ennis is the one that cuts back to the ball. But the key was he got the inbounds pass on the run. He wasn't coming back towards Jeremy Grant, who was the inbound passer. He was actually kind of going parallel. And so he had momentum. He catches the ball and immediately turned up court. And so Syracuse didn't get what it initially wanted. But Pittsburgh actually did a poor job defensively in letting the point guard get the ball with a full head of steam.
As soon as the ball went up in the air, I like knew it was in. The crowd went from like probably the loudest I've ever heard a Pitt crowd at any Pitt sporting event to just dead silence.
I was in a perfect seat on the end line. I could see Tyler Ennis and the ball. It was like right in a line. It was me, the basket, and Tyler Ennis 35 feet away. And so as soon as he launches the shot, I can tell this thing is online. It's got a chance. And then sure enough, it goes right in. And then all I had to do was barely turn my head, and the bench just exploded.
Our angle on it couldn't have been better. Where that position was on the floor, we could see everything. We could see Tyler taking the inbounds pass. We could see him coming across midcourt. He came right in front of us. I could have almost reached out and touched him on the arm as he passed. And when he lined up that shot, that three-pointer, it was basically Doris and I, our eyes were right on his back. And it felt like only about 10 feet away. It was the second it came off his fingertips, I knew it was good.
Everybody would say about Tyler Ennis throughout this season that the other team's defensive pressure could never speed him up. And then in that one moment in Pittsburgh, he sped up, and he beat his defender down the sideline and got to a point where he was still taking a very long shot, but he was open. He had a clear look at the rim, and he was able to, because he had momentum going, his shooting form stayed pretty much the way it would on an 18-foot shot.
It was probably one of the most depressing sports experiences I've ever had. And walking back to the freshman dorms, there was just a mass of people, and no one was talking to each other. You know, everyone was just very quiet and just frustrated, and it was just everyone wanted to throw blame on people, and I hate that. It was just an unbelievable thing. And you know, I guess on that day, Syracuse is meant to win, but that was a tough pill to swallow.
I had my basketball team party at my house, and everyone left before the game. It was a big game. I like watching the games alone in my house, just in case we lose. I don't want to talk to anyone after. So my coach stayed, actually, and it was right before the buzzer beater. It was a timeout, and he told me someone was going to hit a buzzer beater. I didn't think those chances were high at that point. Not a lot of time left, and next thing you know, Tyler Ennis hit a half court shot, and I remember me, my mom, my coach, and my sister was there. We were just running around the house. I think I ran outside or something, and I might have ran in the snow, jumped in there.
We were watching it all here, and that's always a tough game for us, and it was at Pitt, and you know, I don't know how much hope we had, but we knew it was close and we knew we had a chance. And when Tyler hit that shot, I mean, the whole house blew up. I mean, we were screaming and jumping up and down and running around. And yeah, Buddy goes out. Typical Buddy. But it was just, I mean, it took us a long time to come down. I mean, we were just on cloud nine, and for that shot to go down like that and for us to win like that there, I mean, wow, just amazing.
The Peterson Event Center, which had just been rocking, and the Oakland Zoo was just ready to blow the lid off the place, and it went quiet. And it's like the Syracuse celebration was just this one tiny small pocket of 12 to 15 people in an arena of about 15 to 18,000. And everybody is dead silent, stunned, except for all those people in Syracuse Orange.
I mean, it was very exciting, you know, to make a game winner like that from half court. You don't see that every day, or you don't be a part of that. And, you know, everybody was just excited.
He gets the inbound into Ennis. With 2 seconds, Ennis at the buzzer. Good! Tyler Ennis at the buzzer! Syracuse wins 58-56. They are shocked at the peak.
Truly another improbable Syracuse win in a long streak during that 2014 season. The reporting for that section was done by myself, John Banner. Next up is another special game in the hearts of Orange Nation. The 2016 Elite Eight game seemed like it might be a capper on a great March run, but a late comeback carried Syracuse to its sixth Final Four in school history. Jim Boeheim starts off from just after that exciting game, and Mike Waters, Matt Park, Buddy Boeheim, and Julie Boeheim, and others will provide their view on the 68-62 win over Virginia in the 2016 Elite Eight.
Just getting started in Chicago. Syracuse to the Final Four and to Houston after a 68-62 improbable victory over top seed Virginia.
Hey, did anybody in here that thought it was not going to happen? This is the best comeback that I've seen in Syracuse. I haven't been there forever, but in 56 years. Thanks to all you guys for coming here and supporting this. Let's go to Houston!
John Radner, former walk-on on the 2015 Syracuse men's basketball team.
Damon Amendolara, Syracuse class of 2001, host the DA Show, CBS Sports Radio, 9 until noon Eastern.
In my mind, going into this game, I didn't think Syracuse had any chance of winning this game. I thought Virginia was a fantastic basketball team, first of all. Top five team, deservedly so. They had beaten Syracuse in the regular season. And while it had been sort of a close game, Virginia had that one in hand. And I just thought the two styles did not suit Syracuse. That London Perantes and some of the other Virginia guys like Malcolm Brogdon and Isaiah Wilkins, they were just too experienced. They knew the system. They knew Syracuse well. That Syracuse and that mysterious zone defense had kind of worked against Dayton and Middle Tennessee State and Gonzaga, but now a team familiar with it, and that meant the gig was up for Syracuse.
In our comeback against Gonzaga, at times it felt like it was over. And then we just kept willing our way back and finding a way. And eventually, obviously, that Leiden block was huge in that game. And then we ended up winning. So I thought from that standpoint, the team showed its fight. And I thought we had a chance, not a great chance to beat that good Virginia team. But I thought there was always a chance, especially them being offensively challenged at times.
In the first half of the game in Chicago, it felt completely different than the game in Charlottesville earlier in the season. And it just felt like maybe, especially for like Malachi Richardson, that the moment finally had gotten there where that was just a little bit too big for him. That the freshman with a Final Four bid on the line, it was going to be a little much. And that Virginia's experience was just going to be too much for the Orange. Virginia, a veteran club, very good club. Just had its eyes set on a Final Four, and they were just going to get there. And, you know, Syracuse had a nice run, but it was kind of a reminder that maybe Syracuse had also been a little fortunate not to run into Michigan State in the second round back in St. Louis, that Middle Tennessee State had knocked off the Spartans in the first round, and Syracuse, after its win over Dayton, had the luxury of playing Middle Tennessee State 2 days after the Blue Raiders had really kind of played their ultimate game in getting that upset over Michigan State.
I remember thinking that this Virginia team is really good. They're obviously kind of a powerhouse in the regular season, and that Syracuse simply was not at that same level. I can't say I expected great things at a UVA in the tournament because we had yet to see Virginia do big things in the NCAA tournament. But certainly in that regular season game, I remember thinking, well, Virginia's just a much better team than Syracuse is right now, and I certainly thought that it was evident on that night that UVA was playing at a different level.
Wow, well, going into that, again, I think that, you know, if we had to say honestly what we thought was going to happen in that game, we would have, you know, we were probably thinking this will be a real tough one for us to get. You know, I don't think hopes were extremely high, but again, you know, nobody was, I don't think I was going in going, there's no way we're going to win this game. But I did think that the odds were against us.
Thinking back on that first half, London Prentice got very hot and they held us to only 21 points. So it was obviously very difficult for us to score.
Feet inside, left elbow Wilkins, right wing Hall. Guarded by Richardson. Back to Prentice, launches a three, and he got it again. Syracuse continues to give him room straight on, and Parentes makes him pay with his fourth triple of the game. Syracuse with zero. 28-16. Cavs on top.
At halftime, with Virginia up by 14, I was already beginning to write the postmortem of my game story. That the run to the Elite Eight was a good one for Syracuse, but they won't be making the final, you know, and stuff like that. And generally, you don't always do that at halftime. A lot of times you wait and see because you don't want to write stuff that's never going to see the light of day. So you kind of hold off because I don't like the leading copy. But Virginia was just so complete. And up by 14, they're also not the type of team that's going to squander that kind of lead. They don't turn the ball over. They take very good shots. They make it tough for you to score. Their defense is just like a python's grip. They get a lead, and it feels like, you know, a 14-point halftime lead, it felt like 30. I mean, you know, how in the world is Syracuse going to come back against this Virginia team?
Coach Boeheim put the press on at 8:45 in the second half, and I can't recall him really doing that earlier. I know that at least that season, the season after, the two that I played, and I think this season when we were down big to Florida State, he put on the press maybe even in the first half or early in the second half, and I kind of felt that it was like a sign of maybe panic because I've never really seen him do that before until the end of the game.
I've seen the Syracuse press be effective in a couple different ways, and this was one, and you've seen it before. This was different, though, because this was Virginia. They don't get sped up. When Virginia breaks the Syracuse press, normally Virginia brings the ball back out and now is going to make Syracuse play defense for another 20 to 25 seconds. But all of a sudden, the Cavaliers weren't doing that. They were either turning it over in the half court or taking quick shots. which either way is a win for Syracuse. Even if Virginia makes a shot quick, the game is now faster. And Syracuse being behind, they needed to go a little faster because it's going to take time to come back against Virginia if you actually are going to be able to pull off a comeback. So Syracuse had to do two things with this press. They had to speed up the game, and they had to turn Virginia over. And I can't believe they did either one.
The play that sparked the run and the play that sparked the huge comeback was when Trevor Cooney hit a very tough layup. It was a really hard take. He drove it to his right side, and he's obviously known as a shooter, not really as an attacker. But it just felt like, all right, if he can get going a little bit, maybe some guys can pick it up and start hitting some threes, and that's obviously what we did. And obviously the press was huge. Just sped them up. Tyler Lydon held the back end really well, and they'd get two-on-ones, and we're just missing layups.
Drives the lane, up and under, it's good off the window. The dipsy-do from Trevor Cooney in Syracuse, back within 10. The Orange has cut that halftime deficit by 4, and Orange fans rise to their feet here at the United Center. Life brought back into this Syracuse season.
That little run that Syracuse had at the beginning of the second half might have given the Syracuse players hope, and maybe it did. But to me, once Virginia steadied itself, I thought, well, that was nice to think about. But I really didn't think we were seeing a Syracuse comeback yet, because Syracuse was going to take care of business, and they righted themselves. And I think with about 10 minutes to go, Virginia had put the lead back up to 15 points. They're up 54-39. So, again, that half, basically Virginia had withstood that little run, and now you're like, the story's over here for Syracuse.
No, I think there was a turning point in there, because Syracuse was able to knock down a couple of shots on the outside, and they started hitting their free throws. And once Syracuse started scoring with the clock stopped, you could feel the tension really start ratcheting up. And once again, Virginia did not have a history under Tony Bennett and those guys of going deep into March. So there was an unknown of how UVA would handle the situation. But I definitely felt like the momentum started to turn once Syracuse chipped it down to 9, 8, and then 7 points. I thought that the feeling of the game had changed, because Syracuse was starting to be able to do some things that they had not been able to do earlier in the game.
To Lydon for 3. Bullseye! Syracuse cuts the lead in half. It's only a 3-point lead for Virginia. And Tony Bennett says, give me a timeout. It's a 12-2 run for the Orange, who are storming back here in Chicago.
Once that sequence happened, everything then changed, because the entire place is just going crazy for Syracuse. And whether it was the Syracuse fans that had made the trip and couldn't believe what they were seeing, whether it was perhaps people in the stands turning against a one seed, which oftentimes happens at the NCAA tournament, there's quote-unquote Cinderella, even though they're in the same conference, maybe that's what's part of it. But everything just starts unraveling for UVA. And once Malachi starts going white hot, and once Tyler Lydon starts knocking down those shots, everything just felt totally different. And once the barrage happened, UVA couldn't stop it. And that happened so often in March Madness, is that when one team gets the momentum and starts riding that crowd and taking those shots, it's really hard to stop because the energy in the building is so hot. And once you saw Malachi just letting it rot, just ripping it from all over the floor and it's going down, you can just see Syracuse playing with such a different flow and confidence that the tide completely turned, and it was impossible to stop it if you're the Cavaliers.
Syracuse has had a lot of terrific freshmen and confident freshmen. Malachi was a little different. Malachi struggled some that year. He was about their second or third leading scorer, but he wasn't always consistent. But when he got hot, he was as confident of a young player as you would have ever seen. Now, not more confident than a Deion Waiters, and not more confident than a Carmelo Anthony, and guys like that. But if he was making shots, Malachi wanted the ball again, and he could get hot in a hurry.
Virginia just kind of looked bewildered. Malachi Richardson was so hot, and we've seen guys have hot stretches, but, you know, just completely took over the game. And I think that went a long way to what they were doing there.
There was a few times in practice where Malachi did stuff like this, where he would just go on these scoring tangents and runs where literally no one in the gym, two guys, couldn't even guard him. So the fact that it hadn't happened yet that season was kind of surprising, but it's not like this game obviously made Malachi a first-round pick and was his huge moment, but it's not like he had a bad freshman year. He was still a good scorer, and he still had a few games against good teams. So he was always capable of this, and then this was just his NBA, his March moment.
I put Malachi Richardson's confidence in taking threes from all over the yard in that game right on par with Jerry McNamara in the 2003 National Championship game. Freshmen that just didn't care. And maybe because they were freshmen, they didn't know what they didn't know, and they were just letting it all hang out there, just letting it rip from all over the place. But Malachi was so in a zone, and his shot selection and position on the floor and where he just let it fly from, you just knew. He thought that every single shot was going to go in, and in that flurry, every single shot was going in.
Syracuse is coming back, and at this point, they have full control of the momentum. And I can't remember exactly whether they're behind or ahead, but Malachi Richardson has hit a couple shots, and he gets the ball on the right wing, right in front of where we were sitting. And he goes up for a three with Malcolm Brogdon on him. And Malcolm reaches out, and remember, he is the ACC Defensive Player of the Year that season. And he reaches out, and he got his hand on the ball as Malachi's going up for the shot. And Malachi kind of lost it for a brief second and then regains control of the ball, still going up, and makes the three. And I'm like, that is the ultimate heat check shot, that he made a three-pointer over the ACC's Defensive Player of the Year when the ball got tipped as he was going up for his shot. That was an amazing one. To me, that might have been the play of the game.
It was impossible to figure that's how it was going to happen for Malachi Richardson on that day. Again, in the first half, nobody on SU could hit a shot. None of them could break the pack defense. And again, it was a nice run, making it all the way to the Elite Eight. This was a lot of fun, but now it's going to end. And then where Malachi was during the regular season, then to where Malachi was in the first half of that game, then to where Malachi Richardson was when he is just dropping down a flurry of three-pointers on UVA, it was crazy to watch such a dramatic pivot in that game.
Richardson into the lane, off the window, it's good! Syracuse has got the lead! 59-58, 5:40 to play!
Syracuse completes its comeback so early that there was a moment or two where you're like, it's almost like in football where you feel like you've left Tom Brady too much time on the clock and you've scored and you've gone ahead, but there's a minute and a half left and Tom Brady's got too much time and he's going to come back and score. Syracuse completes the comeback. They go ahead with several minutes left in the game. And you're thinking to yourself, at some point, all this momentum is going to go away and Virginia still has time. I think Syracuse was up six with over 3 minutes to go. And it was amazing that they had completed this comeback, but you thought to yourself, if they stop pushing and stop attacking here, Virginia can still win this game.
After Tyler Roberson fouled out, it was a little concerning, even though we were up six. However, yeah, especially in college basketball in March, momentum plays such a key role in the sport, and once we came back from 15 points in the span of 3 minutes or whatever it was, I just think that all the life was taken out of them, and the building was clearly on our side. I remember it was a big regional. There was a ton of Iowa State fans there from the game before that stayed over, and they were all rooting for Syracuse, and it just felt like Virginia had kind of no shot after that.
Did I believe if this team could pull this off? Not at halftime, not with 15 minutes to go, not with 9.5 minutes to go when they were still down 15. I'm not sure when I started to believe that they could pull it off. Maybe about the 4-minute timeout, when by that time I think they had actually taken the lead. But even then, I thought, okay, they've taken the lead. They're now ahead by six. They're in a position to win. But again, you just had this thought in the back of your head: Virginia's going to figure out a way here. And if Syracuse stops hitting these threes from Malachi Richardson and everybody, they could still be in trouble. And you know what? Virginia did get it close. Virginia got within two late in the game in the final minute. Mike Benajay hits one out of two free throws. So Virginia's down three with the ball, and then they miss a three-pointer. And when they miss the three-pointer, Tyler Lydon gets the rebound. And he gets fouled with about 9 seconds left in the game. And he goes to the line and he hits both. And again, remember, this is a freshman. We talked about Malachi Richardson earlier. Tyler Lydon's a freshman playing a huge role in this game. He goes to the line up three and he makes them both. And at that point, up five with 9 seconds to go, Virginia really doesn't have a way to win now. But that game is definitely hanging in the balance in the game's final minute.
It's no good. The Orange Miracle is complete. Syracuse erases a 16-point deficit and is headed to the Final Four. Can you believe it? The 10-seeded Syracuse Orange is headed to Houston for the first time in the history of the tournament. A 10-seed will be in the Final Four.
It is one of the great games in Syracuse's basketball history because of the time that it happened in the Elite Eight against the number one seed for a chance to get to a Final Four. You know, it just had all of the pieces. I think had Syracuse been able to finish it off and actually win a national championship, it might go down in history as, you know, the greatest turning point ever in Syracuse basketball. But because it ended in the Final Four, it might not hold that place. But in terms of a comeback, when it was, who it was against, the circumstances, it is one of the greatest moments in Syracuse basketball history, no doubt.
This game ranks right up there in terms of the greatest comebacks in Syracuse history. I think, for one, you got to remember the moment, you know, where the game took place. I mean, there's big, huge comeback wins in the regular season in a lot of places, but, you know, to do it in the NCAA tournament with a Final Four bid on the line, and you're the underdog anyway, if you were the heavy favorite and came back, it might have more of a feeling of, wow, dodged a bullet there. But it wasn't. It was the underdog making this huge comeback, and, you know, against the team they had lost to in the regular season to boot. I think just because it's in the NCAA tournament and in the Elite Eight, I think it's going to be easily one of the greatest comebacks in Syracuse history, if not the greatest.
Syracuse down by 14 at the half. Down by 16. That was the largest deficit. It came in the second half, and then Syracuse at one point went on a 21-4 run. The Orange, just an incredible and improbable comeback victory to punch their ticket to Houston and the Final Four.
Truly one of the greatest comebacks in Syracuse basketball history and an epic run to the Final Four. Great work by our reporter Thomas Schultz. Next up is a true classic between two rivals. It is remembered as simply the six overtime game, and here it is as told by more than a dozen people involved in that historic game.
Damon Amendolara, Syracuse class of 2001, host the DA Show, CBS Sports Radio. It is one of the most iconic games in college basketball history. And it's one of my favorite memories, one of my favorite moments in Syracuse basketball history. And for all that it had, the spectacle of Madison Square Garden, the old Big East tournament at the peak of its powers, the fact that somebody had to turn around to play the next day after this game, Diebendorf on the scorer's table, Johnny Flynn playing almost every second of that game, the whole thing just goes down in history as one of the most incredible sports moments of that era and one of the greatest college basketball games ever played.
3, 2, 1, the clock. shows zeros as Syracuse has beaten UConn for the fourth straight time in the Big East Tournament, 127-117, the longest game in the history of the Big East.
Mike Waters, college basketball reporter for the Syracuse Post-Standard and Syracuse.com.
It was the Big East Tournament. It was the Garden. It was Connecticut and Syracuse. This game doesn't mean quite as much if it's a six overtime game between South Florida and Syracuse. This was Connecticut and Syracuse.
Sean McDonough, I called the six overtime game between Syracuse and UConn. It was historic. It was dramatic. It was emotional. It had all the backdrop of the history of the rivalry and the coaches and the venue and the meaning of the game. I don't know how it could be surpassed. And if it could be surpassed, it couldn't be surpassed by much. Jake Pursuti, former Syracuse basketball player. It was just edge-of-your-seat basketball. Edge-of-your-seat basketball the whole night.
Jim Calhoun, former basketball coach at University of Connecticut. We couldn't get separation enough from them to put it away, and they couldn't get separation from us because both teams were hanging on as best they could. And what eventually becomes, as you said, the classic.
Bo Garrett is the game producer for the six overtime game for ESPN. As the OTs progress, it's like who can survive the longest, not necessarily win it, but survive it.
Who would have expected when these two teams tipped it off at about 9:30 p.m. At the Garden that night, a Thursday night, that we wouldn't find a winner until about 1:22 a.m. in the morning on Friday morning?
There is nobody out there that thinks something like this is going to happen.
Madison Square Garden, the site of a rematch for Syracuse and UConn. Earlier this year, a 63-49 loss. Number 22, Cuse, lost to then the number one team in the country.
Eric Diefendorf, former Syracuse basketball player. They caught us at a good time, man. We weren't on our game. They had a great atmosphere in there. The crowd was behind them.
That was a game that was a bad game for them. They didn't score. It was on the road.
Buddy Boeheim. That was my least favorite team growing up. More than Pittsburgh, more than Georgetown, it was UConn, definitely.
And, of course, the Garden's going to be completely different. It's going to be the ultimate neutral court when Connecticut and Syracuse are there.
Lots of the programs have some sort of foothold in New York, but nobody has what Syracuse and Connecticut have.
John Cal, lead referee in the six overtime game. The crowd for that game that night was typical of a Syracuse-UConn crowd. Very enthusiastic, very partisan. The fact that it was those two teams going head-to-head really made it an electric atmosphere from the start. When I was looking around in that arena, it was pro-orange, and it's no better feeling, you know, playing on ESPN against your rival in Madison Square Garden, you know, Big East tournament, you know, everything was set up for greatness.
Justin Thomas, former Syracuse basketball player. Syracuse fans descend on the Garden like ants when we're in town. We are a New York team, and, you know, we knew that. It was going to be a home game for us. Whenever we play in the Garden, it's the Sea of Orange. You know, they love us there, and we love playing there.
What do I remember from the regulation? Just a super competitive game. It was tight throughout the whole contest.
The whole game was back and forth.
You know, we were fighting tooth and nail, and we would get off as a rebound. They'd come down and get a steal. You know, it was that type of game, man. They capitalized off one of our mistakes, and we do the same to theirs.
For a moment, so I was like, here we go again, because, you know, we had so much problems with the beat in the middle. You know, that guy in college, he was so dominating with his size alone.
He was the leading shot blocker in the country. He was the National Defensive Player of the Year, the Big East Defensive Player of the Year. He seemed to beat stop a lot of people. He protected that rim for us wonderfully.
Yeah, I remember one play, an incredible play. Stanley Robinson got on the break and just did this freakishly athletic windmill, and I was like, oh, we're in trouble.
A whirlwind dunk from Stanley Robinson.
But, you know, we kept fighting. With that team, we had guys who were scrapped. They were fighters.
71-71.
With 1.1 seconds left, Syracuse with the timeout. There's chance to unleash a shot, but it's going to have to be one doozy, a prayer, a buzzer beater if Syracuse is going to win in dramatic fashion here in regulation. It seems like we'll most likely go to OT, but magical things have happened here for Syracuse in the Garden.
Before the overtime start, obviously the one moment that everyone remembers is the last second shot by Eric Diefendorf that ultimately didn't count.
Ball through a great inbounds pass. It took one bounce. Gavin Edwards was to the left of me.
I mean, it barely skimmed the fingers of Connecticut's Gavin Edwards,
who's 6'10" and is running out to get this pass. And if he tips it, that ball bounces out of bounds, and we never have that dramatic shot by Diefendorf.
So it bounced right into my hand. You know, right when I got it, I let it go. It looked like I had a chance.
Paul Harris gets the chance to run the baseline. Heaves the ball forward. Christoph Ongenaut, the intended receiver. Diefendorf with a three in the right wing. He hit it! Oh, my goodness! Eric Diefendorf hit the shot!
James Breeding, I was one of the three officials on the 6 overtime game. It's all just happening simultaneously. And, you know, at the time, I put my hand up, and I think that he gets it off in time. So it goes in, and I count it, and then crazy just ensued. And when it went through, you know, all the emotions and everything went through me, you know, just turned around and the table was right there. It was just a reaction. It wasn't a thought or anything in my mind. It was just.
Diefendorf went and stood on press row. He's getting swarmed.
That's the magic.
You know, you make the game-winning shot at the Big East tournament against your rival on ESPN in Madison Square Garden. The only thing that you should do is turn around and stand on that tape.
Jamie Sellers, Syracuse fan who was at the SU game against UConn. I was certainly excited to feel like we had won the game.
That moment was the most exhilarating moment that I've ever felt in my life. One of the best moments of my life. That moment was so exhilarating. It was just, you know, every single emotion and type of high just going through my body. Because, you know, as a kid, you dream of doing something like that. And on that national stage where there's millions of people watching you, you know, Syracuse, UConn, Madison Square Garden, what better place for that to happen, man?
I don't remember anything happening like that ever in Syracuse sports history because he thought the game was over. Everyone thought the game was over. The coaches thought the game was over, but the game wasn't over. And here he is celebrating on the scorer's table. I mean, on the scorer's table, which is just an iconic, crazy, weird moment in Big East tournament history. And it had to be Diefendorf who would do it. And it had to be a Syracuse-UConn game. And it had to be an epic thriller. It just had all of the parts you could want for one of the most dramatic moments in Big East tournament history.
You know, we rushed the floor. That was a crazy moment. But I remember Johnny brought me back to earth because while they were reviewing it, Johnny's telling me, he's going, JT, they're going to take this away from him, man. They're going to take this away from him.
They will review it.
That's key. It looked like he got it off, but just barely. It's all going to come down to the refs right now.
It was so loud, I couldn't even hear anything. And I knew we had to go to the monitor to confirm whether it was good or not. And I knew it was really close.
Chick Dean, I was the director for the 6 overtime game Syracuse, Connecticut at Madison Square Garden for ESPN. That first wave of replays, if I can recall it, showed that there could be questions.
Biggest thing there is to make sure everybody slows down and get it right. There's a lot of energy flowing, a lot of adrenaline, and you don't want to rush.
Still waiting for the official. Oh, that's a close one. Diefendorf just barely got it off if he did.
Back then, I thought technology was at a very high level. Obviously, it pales in the technology that's in existence today.
We needed to find a way to show the clock with his hand, and there was one or two angles that showed them both in one frame. Through the technical director, the switcher, the machine, tried to blow up certain parts of it so you could see the ball still touching his finger, as you could also see the clock expire over the backboard. Everyone was kind of gathering. Eric was convinced that it was good, but Coach Bam coming into the huddle, and we're all standing there like, it was too late. It's not going to count. We got to get ready for overtime. For some reason, I remember that distinctively, him saying that.
And the shot doesn't count. We're heading to overtime at Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
UConn survived regulation by a tenth of a second.
I can remember Coach Bernie Fine kind of meandering over towards the scorer's table to try to get a feel for what we were going to come up with. I looked up and Bernie kind of gave me a look of whether it's good or not. I kind of gave him a little nod no. And then Bob Donato indicated that he would go down, and he volunteered to go down and tell Coach Calhoun that the shot was no good.
Coach Calhoun was obviously very happy because we were going to go to overtime.
And I actually had a smile went across my face.
I said, Jimmy, that shot's no good. And he said to me, with an expletive added, you better be right. And I just turned and walked away, and we started on to the first overtime, never realizing what we were about to be involved in.
If the game had ended right there, it would have been a memorable ending, but it certainly wouldn't have been
anything like it was. And my fellow official, James Breeding, who was working his first quarterfinal game in the Big East tournament, seems to be the lost figure in this because he scored the basket as good on the floor.
It's maybe the greatest missed call of my career because if I had gotten it right, we wouldn't have had the craziness in the monitor review in six overtime.
Yeah, we were a little downtrodden. You know, we wanted it to end like that. Really, really, you know, break their hearts. Whether in Chicago would have been epic. But really did we know that, you know, that was a segue into something even more epic.
Thinking we had played Goliath. And then for that to turn around and to be reversed and, you know, realize that now we're going into overtime was from about as high as you can go to about as low as you can go within a matter of minutes.
It was super exhilarating, man. And again, I'm glad that it didn't count because now we get to talk about, you know, what is considered to be the greatest college basketball game.
This could be a dagger of emotion that just drained Syracuse. They were celebrating on the court, and now they find themselves in a situation where they have to go back out and fight for five more minutes against the number three team in the country.
In that case, you kind of throw strategy out the window, and it's all about your will.
The game plans, it was one of survival, trying to find a way, okay? You weren't game planning them. You were trying to find a way to sneak out a win for a historic classic matchup.
I'm not sure I realized that it was a classic until several of the overtime played out. I've certainly done a lot of games in the past, gone overtime, double overtime. You know, once you got to about the third overtime, you realize this is different. This is something that doesn't happen very often.
To me, the moment when you knew you were at a historic event, that you were now watching something incredibly special, was at the third end of the third overtime when Andy Routens came off a screen and made a three-pointer over Hashim Thabeet to tie the game and send it into a fourth overtime. That's when you knew.
Syracuse will need a three. Routens takes it from the left wing and hits it from NBA range. Are you kidding me?
It was officially the longest game in Big East tournament history. The record that it broke was set in 1981 in the championship game of the Big East tournament, which was played at the Syracuse Carrier Dome, and it was Syracuse versus Villanova, and that game was won by Leo Routens on a tip-in at the end of the third overtime. And now here's Leo Routens' son, Andy, tying this game at the end of the third overtime and sending it into a fourth. And it was a rainbow three-pointer over a 7'2" center flying out at him, arm outstretched. At that moment, that's when everybody is like either had their hands on their head or the players on the floor are crouching or going down on their knees. And it's part exhaustion and part exuberance. And at that point, who knew when it was going to end, but you already knew it was special.
It was epic. You know, Andy's just one of the greatest shooters I've ever seen, just period, at any level. And that just shows you the amount of confidence he had in himself to take that shot at that moment after all that time. He still had the energy to get the lift and to get it over a guy like that. Unbelievable shot. Unbelievable. I remember seeing it when it went in, and I was like, that's one of the craziest shots I've ever seen.
He went out there, and he didn't care, I don't know, what the situation was. You know, if he had a sliver of daylight, he was letting that thing go confidently.
That was a memorable shot, regardless of who took it and made it, but it was particularly meaningful to me, knowing, you know, Leo and his history in the same tournament.
Yeah, I think that this game is a pretty perfect encapsulation and symbol of that era of Syracuse basketball. It was crazy, it was goofy, it was unpredictable, but if the stars aligned, it could be iconic and great and memorable, unforgettable, and that's kind of what that game was.
I never remember feeling like I wish this would just end. It was so remarkable. As a matter of fact, you could kind of hear at the end of each overtime number four, it just seemed to just crescendo as it went along.
And Syracuse will have a chance for the final shot. 5 seconds remaining. Routens to Flynn, gives to Paul Harris on the right block. Layup goes and it's tipped away. Harris gets the rebound, puts the shot back up. There was contact, no foul called, and this game cannot end.
Both James Breeding and I had good looks at the play that Paul Harris was involved in at the end of the fourth overtime. We thought the defender had made quite a good block on the ball, and certainly wasn't the type of play that a game of that magnitude should end on.
I remember, as overtimes are piling up, I remember just wanting the game to be over. I'm not going to lie. I couldn't believe what I was watching. I really had to go to the bathroom.
I mean, the biggest one was Justin Thomas, the fellow walk-on. I mean, when guys get thrown out, like the biggest conversation I was had was like, JT, man, you got to be ready. Like, you're probably gonna play.
And that's gonna be a foul called against Eric Devendorf, his fifth personal foul. And now, who do you go to on the bench if you are Coach Jim Boeheim?
So mentally, in my head, I'm still kind of going, yeah, right, okay, yeah, right. But then I see Eric fouled out. Oh, but it's, you know, there's a few of us on the bench. They're not the only one there, you know. There's a few other guys you don't know who Coach is going to pick. But I see Johnny go over to Coach Boeheim, and I see him mouth the words. He goes, put JT in the game. And so from there on, I guess I really am going in. They told me, JT, don't be scared. But I think he was a little more nervous than I was, if I'm being honest, about having me on the floor.
Justin Thomas, the 6'1 senior, will come in for Eric Devendorf. Not a guy who sees a lot of time throughout the course of the season.
It crossed my mind for sure. It definitely crossed my mind not to pee on myself. But once I ran up and down the court, that feeling kind of went away.
I don't know which talent, which announcer noted that in that next set when they're on defense, everybody's sort of just lounging on the court, and there he is doing jumping jacks. They commented on it.
And to the announcers, it was comical because I'm jumping around, and the other guys who've been on the floor, they can barely move. So they definitely got a kick out of that. But I wasn't really doing jumping jacks. I was just trying to get my legs going because I had been sitting for hours and hours.
His energy level and excitement to be in the game, shocking as it was, compared to basically the exhaustion on both sides. And the jumping jack thing is the vision that will stay in my memory of that game forever. I think after Syracuse never leading in the first five overtimes, Justin Thomas is probably the second thing that I will think of when I reflect back on the game.
In a game like that, in a marathon iconic game like that, you never know who's going to end up becoming memorable and for what reason, but yeah, quote-unquote, jumping jack guy lives in history.
Welcome back to Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena. This is what college basketball is all about, as we are set for a sixth overtime game,
Nobody has left.
Before the sixth overtime, I had this, I guess, premonition that Andy Routens was going to do something. I just had this premonition, this feeling that Andy was going to do something big, and that we were going to win that basketball game in that sixth overtime. And, you know, lo and behold, Andy came out and the very first shot hit a big three-pointer.
Andy Routens starts it off with a three. Jenny hits it just inside the NBA line. Andy Routens delivers for three. First lead of overtime for Syracuse.
That's a good time.
And Andy Routens delivers. 113-110 the score.
And from that point forward, I felt like we got this game. We're going to take this now. And that's what happened.
The Orange out in front by five.
The longer this thing went, I mean, if it was even possible to want the victory even more, we did.
And a 10-point advantage for SU will allow Paul Harris to go to the line. Some fans leaving.
The UConn fans, all the blue is leaving. The orange is staying to celebrate this one.
It was as ugly and as intense and as beautiful and as crazy as any college basketball rivalry. And this game is the pinnacle of that rivalry.
It's all a formality. 30 seconds remaining, but the Orange will win the longest game in Big East history.
Once I, you know, kind of knew we were going to take this, definitely was a relief.
10 seconds remaining, 127-117, and all fans can rejoice that this one has finally come to an end.
You know, after a game like that, you're definitely drained and emotionally and physically. You know, you're not going to feel it out there until you're done. You're just like, wow, I'm tired. You know, and I wasn't a player on the floor, but I'm physically tired. I'm mentally tired.
There was a number of different feelings, disappointment, and you're thinking about the game.
I was just grinning from ear to ear with all the other guys, not thinking about the impact. I was still living in the moment.
We as a crew were exhausted.
I don't think the historical significance didn't really set in probably until the next day. And
you know, I had a 6 a.m. flight. I was going home after the game. So I was kind of thinking, you know, I don't have but about 4 hours before I've got to be boarding my flight.
The only thing I remember after the game was ended is that Sean McDonough and Jay Billis and Bill Raftery stood up and gave the two teams a standing ovation.
Well, I've never done it before or since. You know, I don't specifically remember having a conversation with Bill and Jay before we talked about it on the air. I just think it was such a memorable game, such an epic performance by so many players on both sides that they were deserving of it.
The locker room after, how everybody's kind of in shock and giddy with happiness. Those are the things you remember more than anything else.
Coach Ben, you know, what he said that night was that, you know, he'd never been more proud of a team. You know, he really applauded everyone's effort, you know, to win the game. But it wasn't until two nights later, well, after we lost to Louisville, everyone was down. But he, I'll never forget it. What he said was, guys, no one is going to remember who won this tournament. They're going to remember who won the six overtime game.
To me, this game ranks number one on the list of games that I've covered. Not just Syracuse games, any game. This one just it stands out. I mean, it was history.
Without a question, this ranks as the coolest game I've ever been a part of.
You know, I think for anybody who was a part of it, was even there that night, it's going to be one of those things that you'll remember for the rest of your life without any question.
It was a special event. Afterwards, I knew I had involved something very special. So it was a time 10 years removed, but a time I'm sure I'll never forget.
Yeah, this game to me is certainly the game that I will remember for as long as I can remember the games that I was involved in. I had the pleasure of officiating in 11 Final Fours and 7 National Championship games, but this game is really kind of special. It's etched in my memory.
Well, this game ranks, for me, as the greatest of all time in college basketball. I mean, I couldn't come up with another game that, you know, with this type of environment, this atmosphere, the two teams playing, the two coaches, the players, Big East tournament, you know, just with all that, you know, putting all that said and plus going into six overtimes, it just, you know, it's the greatest college basketball game of all time, you know, period.
Well, I think if you're one of the participants in the game, or it's players, coaches, referees, and in my case, and Jay and Bill, broadcasters, if that game doesn't stick with you for the rest of your life, then you're never going to be a part of a game that well. Hopefully you can remember more than one game that you've been a part of, but you know, I think for anybody who was a part of it, was even there that night, it's going to be one of those things that you'll remember for the rest of your life without any question.
5 seconds remaining. 3, 2, 1. The clock shows zeros as Syracuse has beaten UConn.
Thank you, Cole Weinstein, for your great reporting on the six overtime game. That wraps up this oral history of some of the best Syracuse games in the last decade. Special shout-outs to Cole Weinstein, Thomas Schultz, Marcus Gronauer, and Chris Sacchi. This piece would not be possible without the long hours of work from each of you. Thank you for listening, and hopefully these sections helped return you to the excitement that you felt when these moments took place. Thanks to the people who we interviewed who were so generous with their time. If you enjoyed this and you would like more WAER Sports content, follow at WAER Sports on Twitter. I am John Banner, and thank you for listening.